Well, now to a mystery that is in the process of being solved more than 10 years after it happened. Just what happened to David Stewart McLean? He had just arrived in India for a year-long Fulbright fellowship when he woke up on a train station platform and didn't know who he was. It turned out that McLean had taken an anti-malaria drug and began hallucinating, constructing an entirely new identity for himself. McLean says he is still experiencing some amnesia and other side effects from the drug, but he went back to India to try to piece together what happened to him there, what he had forgotten, and what he might remember. His new book is called The Answer to the Riddle Is Me, A Memoir of Amnesia. David Stewart McLean joins us from WBEZ in Chicago. Welcome.
Thank you.
Take us back to where you start the book. You are in India. You are a 28-year-old graduate student beginning a year-long Fulbright there, and you have taken this anti-malaria drug called Larium. What happens?
From what I remember, on October 16th, 2002, I just came to, and I came to while standing up in the middle of this train platform in Secunderabad, India. I didn't know who I was, why I was there. And for the first moment of it, it really wasn't that bad. It was almost like my consciousness had been dilated enough, so I took in all data, sensory data, as if it were all the same worth. And so I had no hierarchy of data that I was taking in. And so it was just sort of amazing. And then as soon as I realized I didn't know what I needed to do next, that's when I freaked out. And that's when I didn't know what to do with the data I was being given, and I didn't know who I was. And that's when it became terrifying.
And that's when someone comes to your rescue and takes you into a mental institution.
Well, he comes to my rescue, Rajesh, the tourist police officer, wonderful young man. And he comes to me and he says, are you doing okay? And I say, no. And he says, you foreigners, you come here all the time and take your drugs. I'm used to this. Let me get you somewhere safe. And as soon as he said that, my brain, which was so desperate for narrative, so desperate for context, came up with a story and a cohort. And I believed that I was doing drugs throughout India. I was a pharmaceutical tourist, and I was just doing heroin throughout India with this woman named Christina, whose face I can picture right now, but who never existed.
And the whole time, as you go through this journey, and your parents come and join you there in India and take you back to Ohio, at least briefly, you're trying to piece it all together and you're not sure really what to believe.
Right. For the longest time, I was convinced I was guilty. I was guilty of being a drug addict. I was guilty of breaking my mother's heart. I was guilty of not knowing the secret code I needed to get into heaven in one of my hallucinations. All of these things I was guilty about. And then even when my parents told me that I wasn't a drug addict, that I hadn't done anything terrible, that I wasn't breaking their hearts, I was still looking for testimony to convict me. I thought they were just waiting until I was sane enough to tell me what I had really done.
And yet you wanted to go back to India once you had come back to Ohio. Why was that? I think that was one of the most puzzling things in the book for me is you finally reached this safer place in Ohio where you've got people caring for you and you decide to go back.
I had been in that state that I woke up in. I was convinced I was always failing everyone around me and myself. And so when I was told that I had a fellowship that was competitive, I wanted to do that. If I didn't do that, I would have failed for all of my life. So I convinced myself. And so I booked that flight back, and it turns out to be a really brilliant, stupid decision. Like, it was dumb. I shouldn't have done it. My parents should have stopped me. It was remarkably dumb. But in India, no one expected me to know anything. And so I was able to work on the foundation of myself as I recovered from this experience. Whereas in Ohio, I would be confronted every day with things I was supposed to know but didn't. And that, I'm now convinced, I would have committed suicide if I'd stayed in central Ohio. And so going back to India, where really people went out of their way every day to tell me I didn't know anything about where I lived, it was safer than being in Central Ohio.
And you say as you were recovering, what's the situation now? Have you recovered completely?
I don't know if anyone recovers anything completely. I don't know if there's an illness that any of us sort of like walk away without some sort of pockmarks left on us. The question at the heart of that is how do you know what you don't know? And that's really difficult for me. I'm not sure what I don't know. When I'm confronted with it, I can point at it and say, I don't know that. But I am also was an academic, and so I lived in many places for 3 years at a time. And so my memories and my life is scattered all over the country in some ways. And so I'm sure there are things that I don't remember, but I'm not sure if I would remember them now anyway.
It's Here and Now, and we're talking with David Stewart McLean. His new book is called The Answer to the Riddle Is Me, A Memoir of Amnesia.
I could recognize these people in these photographs as me, but I felt a distance between us. They could all just as easily have been a chorus of doppelgangers. I felt myself slipping, worried that I'd never recover, that I'd be this wood glue-filled piñata for the rest of my life. And then if I did recover, if I got everything back, who knew if it would happen again? How many times would I end up touring the exhibits of my curated self? I sipped at my drink, which smelled like bandages, and turned on the TV. I sat on the couch and watched a documentary about an NBC weatherman's gastric bypass surgery. I watched the entire absurd show and drank the terrible drink, forcing myself to believe it was all totally normal.
David Stewart McLean reading from his new book. And David, before you developed amnesia, you had taken this anti-malaria drug Larium. The generic is called Mefloquine. It is the third most widely prescribed anti-malaria drug in the world. And over the years, there have been reports that this drug has caused severe side effects, including suicide in some cases. What did you learn about this drug as you were writing your book?
It's an amazing story, the story of Mefloquine. It starts during the Vietnam War when U.S. troops were coming back with chloroquine-resistant malaria. And so the Walter Reed Institute for Research started to look for alternatives. And they didn't really know how it worked. They just knew it did. And then in 1989, it got passed as a malarial prophylaxis. So it's something that people would take in order not to get malaria. And the FDA passed that on an observational study. They observed a bunch of Peace Corps volunteers who had been prescribed the drug. So when a randomized double-blind study was finally done in 2001 in a hospital in the Netherlands, 65% of people who were taking the drug had one or more adverse side effects, and 6% of those people had side effects so bad that they had to be hospitalized.
And La Roche Pharmaceuticals has stopped selling it. Now it's only sold in the generic form.
Only sold in the generic form. La Roche did some denying for a really long time.
Has it been hard for you to take any medicine now, knowing that this caused such a problem for you before?
Yes. I kind of take only medicine that's been around for 40 years nowadays. I try not to go for the new, hot new drug. It's also hard for me to use the bins at Whole Foods because I don't know what's in there. I think once I realized that the chemicals in my brain were so sensitive and can be so easily changed, I suddenly became a lot more sensitive about what I threw into my body.
You know, the image that many of us have of amnesia is the image that is portrayed in movies, even in cartoons, when people get amnesia and then they can't remember things and then all of a sudden it comes back and everything's fine. The image that we see in your book is so much darker than that.
Yeah. I think the image I always had in my experience with amnesia was always Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Where you just get bonked on the head and you know nothing, and then you get bonked on the head again. And then you're back to yourself, no damage. And instead, it's actually this longer, more horrific process. And I'm one of the lucky ones. Without a doubt, I'm really one of the lucky ones. But when you go to try to reassemble your life, you don't necessarily know what agendas the other people around you might have as they sort of tell you stories about yourselves. And you don't have a mechanism for being able to judge those. And so there were a couple ex-girlfriends who were really excited to tell me what a horrible person I was and for me to exist in that.
Well, yeah, and you have to decide who to trust. And many people that you wrote to tell them about what had happened to you thought that you were joking. And it's hard to communicate with people when you don't know what they're thinking about you. You don't know how much to trust them. And they certainly have no idea that this person that they're communicating with is a totally different person than the one that they knew before.
Yeah, one of my professors, a dear friend, I wrote to him to tell him what had happened to me. And he wrote back and said that he had tripped and fallen down the stairs and had been developed superpowers and had been flying around his living room all day. And so it turns out that I was a person who loved the absurd and sort of like absurd statements, which was fine until something absurd happened to me. And then it became trickier.
You have had many physical issues ever since this happened. You had seizures in 2007. You've struggled with alcoholism. You've had panic attacks.
I think the alcohol is definitely like I was a broke grad student, and I think I didn't have health care, and I was also terrified of anyone ever thinking I wasn't sane. And so I self-medicated. I self-medicated with cigarettes and alcohol. Cigarettes are amazing for panic attacks. If you're having a panic attack in a group of people, you can say, I'm going to go outside and have a cigarette, which is exactly what you want in a panic attack. Like, let me pull myself out of this and stand somewhere by myself and breathe by myself for a while, and then I'll rejoin when I can. But if you say to a group of people, hey, I'm having a panic attack, all of those people will close around you like a fist to try to help you. And it's like, that's the last thing you want. And so cigarettes were always great. I could just sort of walk away whenever things got weird. And alcohol really helped with my insomnia, and I could just knock myself out.
Hmm.
And it took me a long time to seek help. And when I did, I found some really weird help. I went to the cheapest psychologist I could find in New Mexico. And boy, she said some weird stuff to me.
Hmm.
And so it took me a while to trust even a therapist to be safe with this story around.
David, I want to ask you, and this may be difficult because I'm not sure how much you remember from before, but how are you different now than you were before all of this happened? What's the change in your identity?
My mom has talked about this a lot to me, and she sort of answered that question as I'm less glib. I'm more serious now. And that's not to say I'm Walter Cronkite 24/7, but I am I'm more serious, and I take my life and my decisions in life more seriously than I did prior. I think life before was a game that I was playing.
And now?
Now, every moment is sort of great, if I can make it that great. I have a 1-year-old now, and so hanging out with basically this tiny amnesiac who from 1 minute to the next can't remember what just happened. And so we just get to knock over blocks, and then the moment of the blocks knocking over is the most beautiful experience ever until we set them up again to knock them over again. And so that's sort of a better place for me to be than before.
David Stewart McLean is the author of The Answer to the Riddle Is Me, A Memoir of Amnesia. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate it.
And we've got an excerpt of the book at our website, hereandnow.org. This is Here and Now.